Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turned Into Punk Classics, a show where we take old episodes of Turned Into Punk that have been lost from the internet and return them to their previous glory by sticking them back on the feed. You can find this podcast on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and all other forms of social media. Well, that's pretty much it. At Turned Into Punk, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at LeftForDamien. I play in a band. More information can be found at fuckedup.cc. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy another TOAP classic. Well, thanks so much for doing this.
Anytime.
Awesome. So I guess, Katie, have you heard, I don't know if you've heard any of the other episodes, but I kind of start them all off the same way.
Okay.
Which is, so how'd you get into punk?
Well, that's a you know, fun question. How I personally got into punk was kind of by accident. When I was in middle school, I was super big on Napster. And for the younger listeners, that was like a program where you could download like illegal MP3s.
It was a trailblazing program where you could download illegal MP3s.
Yeah, so you'd wait like an hour for one song to download, you know. It was a hard life.
Were you in high school, sorry, when you...
No, I was, like, in middle school.
Middle school, okay, sorry.
I was trying to download NoFX song, and then accidentally downloaded a Germs song.
Well, where'd you hear about NoFX first, before that?
I mean, I don't know. I guess, like, when you're... I honestly don't remember, how I heard about NoFX. Probably because, like, I was really into, like, No Doubt. And I was like, well, there's another band that starts with no. Like, I don't know. Like, that's probably.
Well, and they were pretty good about referencing stuff, too, I remember, like, in interviews, Gwen Stefani and the band and stuff. Like, and they took the Vandals and Civ out on their first tour. The first big tour, I mean, that they did and stuff, so.
But yeah, I don't know how I was even, like, looking for NoFX songs. But then I remember distinctly, like, where I was when I first heard Germs Lexicon Devil. Like, I was sitting at my computer and I was like, what is this? Like, this isn't NoFX. Like, this is something else. Because back in the day, people used to mislabel MP3s, like, all the time. So,
oh, absolutely.
So I was just listening to it. Like, this is the weirdest NoFX song I've ever heard. And then I found out it was the Germs.
That's awesome. So, like, that was the first punk band you got into?
Kind of. Yeah. Yes. I would say, yeah. Because, totally.
Were you bummed out when you downloaded Punk and Drublic afterwards?
I never downloaded Punk and Drublic.
Whoa, so you never got into NoFX?
Not really. I think I was like trying to and then immediately got derailed by the Yeah.
Well, that's
so
like.
Then I got really into like Black Flag and Minor Threat and stuff.
So, yeah. So, like, I guess, so where'd you go from that mislabeled MP3? Like, what was your next sort of step?
Oh, shoot. I mean, this was so long ago. It's hard to remember particularly, but I definitely got really into Riot Girl around that same time. So probably also like by accident. It was finding out about music was like, as you know, way different back then. So like I would find out about bands like reading the liner notes of other bands' albums. And like it was really weird getting into music. Like you couldn't just go on Last.fm and see like related bands. Like if you like this, then you'll like this. Like back then it was like kind of by accident you'd find out about bands and then somehow you'd become fans of all that band's friends because they'd all like talk about each other.
Yeah.
And that was about it.
Were there any other kids in middle school that were into like this kind of stuff at this time or were you getting any of your other friends into it?
No, I didn't really have any friends. But this was like freshman, sophomore year of high school. I don't know. I didn't have anyone to share music with until I was like a senior in high school. And that's when I became friends with Cassie.
Okay. So Cassie's like your first like punk friend?
Kinda. Yeah. I think like, but she was 2 years younger than me. So we didn't actually become friends till like I was a senior and she was a sophomore. And we met at a Weezer concert.
Yeah. You guys met outside of a Weezer show, right?
Yeah.
And so like, how'd you know she was like-minded?
Because she was wearing, you know, like Argyle socks and had like a cardigan on.
Identifiers.
Yeah. So like, and like, I forget, but like back in the day, like when we first became friends, like we loved Weezer, but we also loved like Bikini Kill and we'd like, you know, just talk about music all day long. It was fun.
At which point did you start kind of going to shows locally?
Throughout high school, there were like shows, like emo shows, like a lot of emo shows. like we'd go to the Elks Lodge in Ridgewood and watch like screamo bands play. This was, you know, 2001, 2002, so that's when that was real popular then. And then our friends in high school, their bands would play, and they ended up, like, all those bands ended up being like Titus Andronicus and Real Estate.
What like, were their bands?
What were their bands back then?
Yeah.
Okay, so Real Estate was in a band called Fletcher and the Sticky Wickets. It was a ska band.
Yeah, that sounded so secret ska. Like, that was like...
what was Pat Stickles' band?
Wait, Sticky Wickets?
Yeah.
Oh, so it's like a reference to cricket, too.
Yeah, it was like a political thing. I don't particularly remember. Oh, there was Paperface, which I think was Matt Mondanelli from Real Estate's band.
Yeah.
I'm really hazy on these details. I have terrible memory.
What was their vibe?
I don't know. A band. A band with guitars. I don't really remember.
No problem.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with this sort of like minutia of like what people were into before.
Yeah. I mean, Cassie's band was awesome.
What was Cassie's band?
Cassie had a band called Upholstery.
Okay.
And it was like her and like her two best friends or three best friends in her grade.
Okay.
And they were like really kind of ramshackle, kind of like K Records style.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So like Beat Happening vibe.
Yeah. Or... like really Beat Happening esque. And I was like friends with them, but I couldn't play any instruments. And so they had a song called Kickball Katie.
Yeah.
Dedicated to me. Cause like I would always be there, but like I couldn't really participate.
So like, at what point do you kind of start playing, like much later, do you start playing instruments?
I started playing bass when I was about 20.
Okay.
So I was like in college and my friends were like, we're going to start a band, like be the singer. And I was like, I've never been in a band before. And they were just kind of like, who cares? And that's how it all began.
So I guess like back to when you were kind of going to these high school shows, like, are these like DIY shows that you're going to mainly, or are you going to like some of these bigger shows that are coming through, like the Warped Tour and Bamboozled? That's the big New Jersey one, right?
Oh yeah. No, I've never been to Bamboozled. Most of the shows were local shows or like house shows, but me and Cassie did sneak into Warped Tour one year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we snuck in because the guards like were looking the other way. By the way, that is such a high school thing to do, is like drive 2 hours to Warped Tour because maybe you can sneak in. Like those are some bored teenagers, and we were bored teenagers, and we drove 2 hours to Asbury Park to like try to get into Warped Tour without paying.
We drove 2 hours to find out we weren't on Pennywise guest list in Buffalo one time.
Yeah, so that's like some teenager stuff that we used to do, and we got in, and then we found a backstage pass laying on the ground.
Oh, but I had that happen too one time at the Warped Tour, but go on.
And so there's only one pass, and there's two of us, and somehow that worked and got us backstage, which doesn't make any sense, because, like, as you know, it's not that easy to, like, get backstage at festivals, but somehow we had one pass for the two of us, and it totally worked, and we interviewed Lars from Rancid.
What, were you guys doing a zine?
No.
What were you interviewing for?
We just, like, made up that we were writers.
That's awesome.
And we asked all these, like, very invasive questions, because we were, like, high school girls, and that's what you do.
What did you record it on? Did you even record it, or just, like...
I don't think so. I think we were just asking him questions. We were, like, teenagers just asking him questions. I don't think we were writing anything down. But there is a photo that we took with him from that day on the internet.
Oh, that's awesome. Did you know about his connection to the Riot Girl thing, too?
No.
Like they're on that Kill Rockstars comp, and then they have that song Olympia WA about Bikini Kill, or Toby, I guess. It's Tim's song about Toby.
Crazy. Yeah, I mean, I never really got into them, but it was a fun interview. But I didn't know anything about them particularly.
Yeah, no, I think I'm the generation before where Rancid was kind of my, I don't know, what was your big, like, punk band?
Like, that were around, like, while I was getting
into... Yeah, like, your mainstream teenage punk band type thing. I said, you know, you said No Doubt, but I guess that's sort of pro...
That was, like, yeah, I don't know. Let me think about this.
Taking Back Sunday or something, was that...
I mean, I did see Taking Back Sunday once.
Yeah, but they were your thing.
No, see, I think probably, like, If I had to think of my one big band, it would probably be like the Pixies, but that wasn't like my era. But yeah. I would maybe like Weezer.
Weezer.
I was really, I loved Weezer.
Were you a Saves the Day fan?
No. See, this, like, I feel like I missed out on emo. Like, I just.
No, I don't think you missed out.
Oh, you know who I loved that was like my life?
Who?
For like a 2 years was The Gossip.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it definitely. They hit like music. It felt like a real like paradigm shifting kind of band.
Yeah, I remember I saw The Gossip play like 6 times in 1 year, like when I was in high school, and I would dance, like I would get on stage and like take my shirt off and dance with everybody.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How everybody would do.
Well, it must have been like they were just like an incredibly empowering band, especially for young women, I imagine.
Yeah, no, it was it was amazing. It was one of the greatest things I had ever seen when I saw them.
You used to travel a lot for shows. Cause I remember, I was trying to think where the first time I remember seeing you at a show, but I have this picture that comes on my computer from time to time that's like a live shot from a bridge show that we played at South by Southwest, and I can see you right in the crowd there.
Yeah. I would travel so far to see Fucked Up play.
But were you traveling to see other bands too?
Now we're talking about like when I was in college.
Well, I don't mean to jump ahead, but let's go back, I guess, to like, I guess we can go back and I can still punish you more about details on these high school bands and these high school shows. But
yeah, these were fun. I mean, my high school music experience was really strange.
Yeah. Were you into like Tear It Up at all? I'm just trying to see when you got into hardcore.
Hardcore was well, other than like early 80s hardcore.
Yeah.
I did not get into modern hardcore until college.
Okay. Until college.
I didn't know any like local hardcore bands.
Yeah. Like was that like a thing like for like, cause I'm like when I was like in the early 2000s in New Jersey, the stuff I totally remember was like, you know, Tear It Up obviously was a big band that was kind of happening and stuff like that. Did you see any of that sort of stuff, or was that not really in your
periphery? That was before I got into like local hardcore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That stuff that was kind of going on. So like, I guess so what happens then? You go off to college and
I go to college and I go to Rutgers, New Brunswick, which is like
New Brunswick basement shows. Like,
yeah, it's like the capital of New Jersey hardcore, you know? So all of a sudden I'm like, I see this whole new world. Cause me and my friends were still kind of playing, you know, we were playing like Riot Girl, like we were in Riot Girl bands, but then all of a sudden there was all these hardcore shows everywhere. And, and you know, because it's a college town, we're all like very, like we're all friends with each other. Like,
yeah.
Different scenes, and they kind of become one scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's when I started getting into hardcore, was when I started watching the shows and being like, holy shit, this is so fun.
What were some of the local bands you were into around that time?
There was this band, Seasick.
Okay, yeah, totally. Yeah, I remember that.
And they're my bros. What other bands? I mean, honestly, I really liked a lot of like Richmond and DC bands, like the No Way Records.
Absolutely.
And they were touring so much, it was as if they were local bands. Like, seriously, like a No Way Records band would come through New Brunswick once a week at minimum.
Yeah, it felt like that was like a real, I don't know, maybe because that's the time in hardcore that I actually started traveling and stuff, but it felt like it was like that was a boom period.
Yeah, I feel like Ian Dixon, like he would throw those hardcore gig volume shows all the time. Like, seriously, like 3 nights a week, there was like crazy hardcore shows going on in New Brunswick. It was amazing.
Well, yeah, it's like Ian Dixon on sort of one end of, I guess, America doing it, and then Timmy Hefner on the other end side.
The global aspect.
Yeah. Kind of doing the same sort of stuff. And I guess like, you know, I guess you had people all over the place. Kind of, there was like a really good circuit.
Yeah.
You could play and get out there.
Oh, and, yeah.
And also those grease trucks were incredible too, I bet.
Which is like, now that I think about it, like every band would go to the grease trucks and eat sandwiches. I'm like, that is the worst food to eat before you play a show.
Yeah. I would always go after, but that's, I definitely would go.
That is smart. I saw a lot of bands go like before and after.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure that I can think
that
of.
That is awful. Awful for your body and your mind.
I knew by that point, the time that we played, I think we played like right across the street one time at that house.
Yeah, that was Seasick's house.
Was that Seasick house?
I think that was like 120 Hamilton.
Yeah, that was it. And I think we played with a No Way Records band, if I remember.
Like, probably.
Was it Government Warning or Direct Control? I'm trying to remember that show. I remember I did a interview beforehand that for Rump Shaker with Eric. That was like 4 hours long.
That is funny.
But anyway, I digress. Sorry.
Oh, wait, but in college, that's when I started traveling.
Okay, yeah. So I guess you just get into to the shows at that point and kind of like getting involved and going to see bands and things like that. Did you go to Chaos and Taos and stuff like that?
I did. I went 3 years in a row.
Whoa, that's awesome.
But I think so this brings me to the first time that I saw you play.
Okay.
So I can't remember if it was 2005 or 2006, but that was like Chaos and Taos. We're at, it's like one of the after shows, like at a warehouse somewhere weird.
Yeah.
Somewhere like outside of downtown. And I'm sitting on these like steps watching you guys playing. I think you played like a 10-minute long Integrity cover.
We did. No, we did the entire Integrity 10-inch very poorly.
And you also played the Germs.
Yeah, we did a Germs cover. I think we did Lexicon Devil.
Yeah, you did, because it struck a chord in my heart.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because that was my first punk song. Oh. And so I was sitting there on these steps in Austin, and I was like, this is my new favorite band. Like, they're playing all my favorite songs. And I was, like, hooked.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah, I totally remember seeing you, actually. That was that Chaos and Taos was, that was the first time I ever took my shirt off on stage the next night. It was a incredibly empowering time for me.
I'm glad I could be there for that.
Oh my gosh, it was a that was such a cool show.
Yeah,
like I like, you know, what a cool bill. Like, did Warhead and Forward play that year?
Yeah,
and Tragedy played, and Severed Head of State, and Limp Wrist, and the Dicks. I think
it was amazing. I remember me and my friends drove from New York to that. So we actually followed Tragedy, Forward, and Warhead on that tour. We saw them play like in Denton, and then we saw them play like somewhere else. Like, it was like we were following the tour along.
Yeah, you were like Tragedy heads. Like, I'm trying to think of like the Deadhead equivalent.
Yeah, just like so tragic, you know. Yeah,
and so tragic heads.
It was so tragic. But we, every night, I remember like watching Warhead and Forward, and they'd be like, they'd only know how to say like, someone bring us beer.
Yeah, they were.
I saw them play like 4 shows, and they said the same like, bring us beer thing at every single one. I was like, yes.
Well, you've been to Japan, right? Like, like the availability of narcotics and is just so limited. So I guess
there's no drugs there.
Yeah, exactly. So when these fans come here, and just like the proximity of also the alcohol, obviously, which you can get in Japan, but
yeah,
it was just like seeing Warhead look just the ravages of partying on that band at the end of that weekend. It was like they looked like they were longing to get back to Japan.
Yeah. Well, that was a crazy weekend.
That's an amazing.
Was that 2005 or 2006? Do you remember?
Gosh, I think it was 2005.
I can't remember.
Next time I see you, I've got a giant poster. Like, I have a stack of these giant silkscreen posters that Timmy gave me downstairs for that, if you want one.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's awesome.
That was life-changing. Was that also when Dead Moon played?
Yep.
And that was, like, their final show.
And the Marked Men, too.
Yeah. Do you remember what happened?
Mark Pesci did a stage dive into no one.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was really bad.
Mark, if you're listening to this.
I haven't seen him in a minute, but I do run into him from time to time, and I'm sure he'll be the first. There's some amazing photos of him moshing for a Career Suicide show like the next week, and he had to wear a helmet in the pit.
Aww.
Because of that.
I met Mark in the river, like Barton Springs.
Yeah.
Because remember, like, that whole weekend was so magical, and I remember going to Barton Springs with my friends, and then it was like all of the bands were all swimming, and that's, I met Mark while swimming. Like, hey, like, we're like treading water, and that's how we met.
Yeah, that is like, especially that. Because I've been to a couple other Chaos and Taoses since, and I don't know if it's, I've grown up, but just that one in particular, I have made so many friendships that have lasted the test of time that I like look back on. I'm like, wow, I met that person here. I met that person here.
I met so many of my hardcore friends at that Chaos and Taos.
So many. I remember sitting in a hot tub with Cooch and Chris Corey and Jay Scheller in the Metz's house, and in their hot tub in the back, and Maggie coming down being like, what are you guys doing here? And we're just like, I don't even know how we got invited to their stay at their house, but we were sitting in their hot tub. It was a magical weekend.
It was magical.
Sorry.
Yeah, I can continue.
No, go.
There.
Go.
Because that brings me to one of the other best weekends of my whole life, which was the Hidden World release weekend.
You came to Toronto for that?
I did. And all my other friends in New Brunswick all went down to Gainesville for the fest.
Oh, yeah.
So I drove to Toronto by myself.
Oh, my God. That's incredible.
Yeah. It was like, what? Like, I was crazy. But I
no,
was like,
that's awesome. Believe me. I had no idea. Well, I knew. Like, obviously, I remember just, like, seeing you at all these shows. And you know, I just felt like, you know, that was like, you were just, like, such a part of the scene. You know, like Kickball Katie, you know, and it was like, it was so, and it's always weird. Cause like, I still associate you, I think more as being a hardcore kid still than being, like, you know, this huge, popular, majorly influential indie musician.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, you know, yeah. And I knew you were probably going to say that as soon as I said that, but like we did a tour with Always opening for us. And you know, believe me, I only say stress that they were opening for us because I'm sure we will never be in a position to have them open for us again because they're kind of blowing up now. But they were talking about Vivian Girls with the same sort of reverence that you talk about the Germs.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like they were like, and you know, and it's, you know, it's, I still like, it's just so weird because, like, they were like, yeah, like, you know, the Vivian Girls are so influential to us. And I'm like, you know, they're like Kickball Katie's like a hardcore kid and all this sort of stuff. And just like, they're like, no, I had no idea. And like, you know, obviously the punk part of the Vivian Girls is very well established. But like, you know, like the fact that you're like a legit DIY basement show going to hardcore kid is also something that cannot be understated or overstated, whichever. Sorry.
I mean, it was fun. We had fun.
That's awesome. So like, and so where, so you kind of like, you're going to all these shows. Did you play in any hardcore bands?
No.
So Vivian Girls were your first band?
Yeah. Well, you know, Kevin Mannion, he like lives in Brooklyn. Him and this guy CJ had like kind of a punk band for like a couple months.
What was it called? Bass.
We covered like Today or Love, Tomorrow the World. And
good
like
song.
Our band was called The Gutter.
The Gutter.
We had a song called like "We're from the Gutter." Yeah.
What were you doing? What were you doing in the band?
I played bass.
Oh, okay. So you didn't.
I'd found a bass.
Yeah.
In a basement. I literally had found it in a basement. And I made like a duct tape strap and played a bunch of shows with my friends. Oh, and me and Allie played. I played bass in a band called We're Not Virgins with Allie. That was a Riot Girl band.
Was it just a two-piece?
No, it was a four-piece.
Oh, it's four,
she
okay.
Played drums, and I played bass, and there were our other friends, Leslie and Megan, were in it. And it was called We're Not Virgins, and we named the band. We started the band, like, the day after I lost my virginity.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So that, like, is that why you picked the name?
Yeah, it was like, dude, let's think of a name that's kind of like, you know, feminist, but not gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was our like all right, let's think of a name that's like, you know, Riot Girl, but like all words that are like fine. But then we also like, we had this like, we learned all these 60s covers in case our parents came to the show. So we like, we had this alternate band that was called what were we called? The Hand-Me-Downs.
Okay.
And we would like, we learned like Warm California Sun and like Hang on Sloopy.
So you guys were kind of like,
as if our parents were going to like come to our show in New Brunswick and like crash it. That's like the most insane idea. But that was, you know, we were like 19.
But you're putting yourself in that actually New Jersey punk tradition. Cause you know, the Worst, the New Jersey band.
No,
they were like this, like band that was on Mother Records, but they had an alter ego band called The Bad Guys, I believe. And it was like a power pop band that they would use to get booked gigs with. They would get like sent out this power pop 7-inch and The Worst would show up instead.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much like, that was like what we were going for. So our band knew about 8 songs, 4 of which were like, We're Not Virgin songs, and 4 of them were Hand-Me-Down songs. And that was about it. But anyway, so fast forward, Vivian Girls were my first like real band.
Okay, and so, like, you kind of stayed in touch with Cassie the whole time that she's kind of, like, finishing high school in your university?
She's in Brooklyn, and she's in a band called Bossy.
Okay, yeah, I remember that. Sorry.
Yeah, and so, and, like, she would always come to New Brunswick to, like, hang out with us. Okay. So, like, and, like, my friends in New Brunswick. And I would go into Brooklyn and, like, see Bossy play. And then one night, we're in Brooklyn, and we're, like, it's, like, 6 p.m. or something. And we're, like, we want tattoos. And we're, like, where are we going to go get tattoos? And we, like, go to the tattoo shop, and they're closed. And we're, like, that's dumb. And so me and Cassie drive to, like, the Jersey Shore to go get tattoos, which is, like, 2 hours away. We were bored. We had a lot of free time.
You were really into Stick and Pokes, like, super early.
I like Stick and Pokes. But yeah, so, yeah, I've given and received some Stick
and Pokes. Yeah, absolutely. But I remember that was, like, you know, before there were tattoo parlors that specialized in such.
They specialize in Stick and Pokes?
There was a Stick and Poke tattoo parlor. There's definitely a couple in New York, I'm sure, but there's one in Toronto I know of, at least.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a new world.
So we're driving down to the Jersey Shore, and she's like, I met this girl named Frankie. We need a bass player. Will you be our bass player? And that's, like, when... So we were, like, best friends throughout, like, you know, before Vivian Girls. We'd been in high school together and stuff.
So what kind of shows did Vivian Girls start playing immediately?
Punk shows.
Punk shows, yeah. I was going to say, what were some of the bands you guys were playing with?
We played one of our first shows with this, I think they're called Spider in the Webs, mm-hmm. which I think is Toby Vail's band.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely. We played with them, too. They were awesome. So
we, like, got added to the bill. They were playing a house show in Brooklyn, and we got added. It was, like, we knew, I think, 4 songs or something, like, absurd. Like, we shouldn't have been playing shows yet.
Was she covering, like, Nervous Breakdown still? Were they covering Nervous Breakdown?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I know we covered Wipers.
Awesome. Awesome.
Telepathic Love.
Yeah, you guys were, like, kind of responsible, I think, for that Wipers cultural resurgence for the Wipers in a lot of ways.
I mean, we did cover the Wipers. I don't know how influential.
Well, I think, you know, you guys, and there was that Wave shirt. That was that.
There was the Wave shirt. The Wipers flip. It's so funny you're asking me this now, because in an interview I did, like, 7 years ago, someone said that same thing.
Well, that's why
that Wave shirt came out. Yeah.
Well, someone's going to say that I have dated questions, but I prefer to think of them as timeless.
But yeah, Wipers were hugely influential on Vivian Girls. That was, like, that's the one band we all could agree on. We were like, that band's the fucking best. Sorry, am I allowed to curse?
Yeah, well, this is, fuck yeah, it's fucked up podcast.
I don't like to curse very much, but when I talk about the Wipers, I curse a lot.
Well, then it's totally acceptable.
And we were all like, high five, three-way high five, that band is the best. Yeah. We love them. And that's what we, like, bonded over.
Yeah, it's like the Wipers, like, it's incredible how good that band is. Like, like, they have that, you know, there's that comp where all the, like, you know, like, everyone covers them, Poison Ideas on it, and Nirvana and Hole.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that, Nirvana covers that song, which sounds exactly like Nirvana, and, like, the Wipers put that out in, like, what, 81, 82?
A long time ago.
It's crazy. That band is so good. So good. So, like, where did you get into the Wipers from? Was it just from, was that 3-disc CD reissue? Because I think that's where I first really got into them from.
I remember the moment that I decided to get really into the Wipers. It was, there was this band from Portland called Defect.
Mm-hmm.
And
Colin.
D7 at a house show that I was at in Brooklyn back then. And I remember being like, this song is amazing. And that's when I was like, I'm going to listen to everything that the Wipers have ever done. And that was like this pivotal moment where I got really into them.
Were you into the Observers at all?
A little bit.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think I missed it a little bit.
I don't know. I was thinking about them the other day, and they're another band that I think, you know, just was kind of like, didn't really have like the moment kind of at the right moment, but they're super good. Like I still listen to that LP.
Mm.
Throw it on once in a while.
I've not heard that LP in a very long time, but.
But like, yeah, so Defect, and sorry, I power talked over you. What were you saying the song they covered?
Oh, they covered D7.
Oh, wow.
Seventh Dimension.
Yeah, yeah. That song. Yeah.
Where it's like real slow and sludgy, and then it gets crazy. And I was like, this is the best. I had like one of those, you know, those like white light music moments.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's great when you see a band cover a song and it just like opens up a world for you with like, wow, this is awesome. I can't believe I didn't know about this band. Thanks for covering it.
Yeah, dude. Oh, well, I had one of those like white light moments when you guys on the bridge, you guys covered that Poison Idea song.
Just to get away.
Yeah. And you guys, your cover of that song was so good. It was like, oh. I was just like, Poison Idea is the fucking best.
Oh,
You know?
Well, like, they are the best. Like,
they are. I mean, like, they legitimately are the best. But, like, I remember being on the bridge watching you guys cover that song and being like, this is the best moment ever.
Oh, well, wow. Thank you. That's unbelievably high praise. Like, wow. Thank you. I had no idea. Like, I knew, like, obviously, like, as I say, I knew you were at that show. Are you talking about the South by Southwest Bridge show?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've seen you guys play on the bridge more than once.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm thinking about
I thought I was going to die every single time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, they got to a point where every time I was like, this is silly. This is silly. This is more and more ridiculous each time. And then I think it was like the last one where I was just like, this is just not safe anymore.
Yeah, like we're asking for it. For the listeners who have never been to a bridge show, it's a pedestrian bridge in Austin that goes over the river. And they would like bring a generator out and like have bands play in the middle of this bridge.
Yeah.
And they'd have, Timmy was in charge of this, right?
Yep.
He like did all of these. And the bridge would be like shaking because there'd be kids like going crazy. It was crazy, and it would be like kind of like oscillating, like in a terrifying way.
And the story was apparently, I don't think this is true at all, was because the bridge was over the whatever the river is, that it technically was a state issue, not a city issue, and that's why the city police could never come on there and arrest people.
It never really got shut down, did it?
It never got shut down, which is crazy because it, like, even when it was just like these punk bridge shows after Chaos and Taos, you know, it never got shut down. It was so weird, and it was like generator shows. I remember walking to the last time we did it, which I think was not the year the year we're talking about. Like, I think it was a year after. And I remember walking by the guys from Justice, and they were talking about how Black Flag was going to be playing on the bridge. And this is before Black Flag was ever going to be doing a reunion. And I was like, oh my God, are these guys going to be disappointed? But then, you know, but yeah, it was a, those bridges. Did you guys ever do a bridge show?
We did. Yeah. We played one with No Age.
Yeah.
During South by Southwest one year.
And did we play that too?
You know who played was Trash Talk.
Okay, yeah.
Or was Trash Talk playing when we were playing? I forget. All of these memories kind of combine into one. But I think that it was, okay, so because I remember we used, you know what? You played with No Age. We didn't play with No Age. We played with Trash Talk and another hardcore band.
That's it. That makes sense.
What was Annihilation Time?
Oh, wow. That would have been amazing. Crazy.
We played through all of their amps. It was crazy. we did not like us at all, and it was great.
Did you always, I was going to ask you guys, like, I think you guys are kind of were in the same sort of position that we were in, which is just like always never fitting in.
Yes. Well, I would put it as fitting in everywhere.
Yeah, well, okay, that's much more positive.
That's the half glass, that's the glass half full approach.
Yeah, that's your Kevin Seconds BYO style take on it.
We fit in everywhere. I mean, yeah, we didn't fit in anywhere or anywhere particular. You know, like it was fine.
Well, because I think you guys is a punk band. You know, like that's and I
a lot of people do not think of us as a punk band.
No, I'm sure, and it's because a lot of people are very protective over whatever their particular definition of punk is.
Yeah, so a lot of people were like, Vivian Girls are a C86 band. Vivian Girls are a punk band. Vivian Girls are a hardcore band. Vivian Girls are a girl band. Like, there was, like, all these different sorts of definitions.
Yeah.
We were just a band.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, you guys got it a lot harder, obviously, like for a gender thing, you know, but then a band like my band got. But I think you guys also got a lot harder because it was like kind of at the advent of people being horrible on the internet.
Yes.
You know, it was like just when people were realizing that you could be a terrible person on the internet.
Yeah. I mean, when Vivian Girl started, there was definitely a couple days where me, like Allie and Cassie would read Brooklyn Vegan comments and cry together.
Yeah, that thing.
It was gnarly. It was really bad.
But it almost became, like, you were the band that it became this for, but it became like a cliche about Brooklyn Vegan. Like, it was just like, you know, you just wouldn't read the comments. It's like, yeah. Oh yeah, check out the story on Brooklyn Vegan, but just don't read the comments.
See, that second part of that sentence, the don't read the comments part, that wasn't around yet.
No, so exactly.
We were sitting, we would read the comments and be like, it took us a good year to figure out to not read the comments.
Yeah. No.
But now it's a given.
Well, I still, now, sorry.
You read the comments?
Well, no, like I'm not going to lie, but like, okay, like once in a while, I'll be like, okay, I'm smoking weed. I'm on YouTube. You know, like I'm staying up way too late considering how early the kids are going to wake me up the next day. I want to see how many clicks, how many views the weed documentary I made with Vice has, right? So I'll go over to it and then I'm like, I might as well scroll down for some stupid reason and see what the top rated comments are.
Oh God.
And then it's just like, oh fuck. Why do I do this?
Yeah. I tend to avoid all comments, like YouTube especially.
YouTube is the worst. But oh. Brooklyn Vegan's the worst. But YouTube.
Well, Brooklyn Vegan is legitimately the worst, but like I never really go to Brooklyn Vegan, whereas, you know, like every time we put out like a La Sera music video, I'm tempted to like read the comments and if I do, I regret it immediately.
Oh, absolutely. Like, no, it's just like you can't ever read the comments. And it's like, and you know, it'd be one thing if it was just bands, but like you read the comments of like just some like kid who's opening a pack of Pokemon cards and it's just like people saying horrible things about this poor kid, and it's like, oh well, it extends to so many other terrible places. But I remember like Tom Sharpling talking about it on The Best Show, and Kathleen Hanna were talking about it and stuff back then, and was that, I don't want to say validating because nothing that comes out of that horrible comment thing has to be validating, but like the fact that, you know, you were someone who played in Riot Girl bands and that you had, I guess you played your first show with Toby Vail. So, you know, you already had that kind of acknowledgement from the upper class of, or the elder class, I should say, of Riot Girl bands. But like, just to be acknowledged by like another punk band that inspired you like that, was that always like, was that refreshing at all? Or Kim Gordon too, I know, like,
yeah, actually so Kathleen Hanna's documentary came out last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, she like, what's her documentary called? I forget.
The Singer? Punk Singer?
The Punk Singer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that song, by the way, the Julie Ruin song, The Punk Singer, inspired me to first write my first song.
Really?
I love Julie Ruin. But anyway, so her documentary, they had a screening in LA, and Allie from Vivian Girls went to it, and in like the Q&A section at the end, she talked about Vivian Girls comments. And it, apparently Allie was so touched that she started crying. I wish I had been there so much, but she was like, yeah, the internet sucks. Like there was this band, the Vivian Girls, and like blah 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 blah. It's like it does mean a lot, and it like it's pretty powerful for like, you know, little Riot Girl like me.
Well, yeah, I'm like, you know, and also I remember like when we played on that tour we did together, when we played that show in Connecticut, and like the guys from 76% Uncertain, like, you know, watching you guys and stuff like that. I don't know if you were a fan of them, but I always loved that fucking band. So, you know, and they played that show too. Do you remember that weird Connecticut show we played?
Oh my God, I totally forgot about that until right now.
You want to know something that's crazy? You remember the 12-hour show that you guys played at? Yeah. That we did?
Yes.
Do you remember who the comedian was that performed there?
No.
Hannibal Buress.
Oh yeah, he was at like at ATP.
Yeah, no, but this is before that. This is at the 12-hour show.
That's crazy. I did not know that.
Yeah, like I totally didn't make the connection too until ATP were like talking. He's like, "Yeah, I performed with you guys before." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, the 12-hour show."
That's crazy. I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, no, I totally like have a vague recollection, but there's a photo of me and him from back at that show.
Crazy.
And stuff like that. But like, yeah, that was a weird, you know, for me, that was like a really difficult tour, that tour that we did together.
Cause How
it, it was that transitional tour of being like the hardcore darling Maximum Rock and Roll band,
mm-hmm.
where we were all of a sudden like this band that had like, you know, like a real great, did they have Best New Music back then or what was like, cause you
we got it and you got it like in the same week.
The same week. Right. And we both had this like huge acknowledgement, which meant that like, yeah, if you play a show in New York, Chicago or LA right now, it'll be amazing. But like, I don't know if you remember, we played that show in DC and I had like a nervous breakdown on stage.
I sort of do remember that at Rock and Roll Hotel.
Yeah, Rock and Roll Hotel. And I like ran off the stage and stormed off because I remember just like looking and just seeing all these hardcore kids with their arms folded, just like mean mugging and being like so bummed about the entire thing. But I don't know. It was like, it was difficult being like a buzz band. Did you guys find it difficult?
Yeah. Yes. I would say hands down, yes.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people would come to see us just to be like, yeah, I told you they sucked.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like every time we played a show in that whole like 2 year period, it was half devoted, wonderful fans and half like people who are very skeptical and are there just to see how bad we were.
Yeah. And it's and no matter how many devoted fans there are, all you are able to do, well, at least myself, I shouldn't speak for you, but I mean, all I'm able to do is focus on the people that are just there to hate.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, it's so much easier now that I just do La Sera and like only nice people come.
Yeah.
It's like, it makes me be like, oh, like not all bands went through what Vivian Girls went through. Like, that's crazy. Like sometimes you just play shows and fans come and that's awesome. Like, what are these shows without all the people who hate you in the back that are like trying to see how bad you are? Like, that was just what we got used to.
Yeah.
For a while. And it's crazy.
It's weird. It's like, yeah, it's like, I think, you know, as a band, like we're kind of just settling into a point now where I'm like, oh, so this is a fan base. Okay. This is like, it may be not as glitzy as it was being like a hipster darling band, but like, it's certainly a lot less anxious.
Yeah. It's calmer.
You're calmer. What was like, what was the weirdest point? Was there ever like, cause you guys did, I remember at Coachella, did you guys do like a crazy fashion shoot?
We did. Oh yeah. Well, it was crazy, but
it was pretty crazy.
Us and No Age did like a 60s style photo shoot for the New York Times.
Yeah, that was it. I remember you guys walking around backstage just like totally
We had done up. Yeah, it was definitely like a really weird clash between the attention we were getting and the kind of music we were making.
Mm-hmm.
Like they weren't really in sync.
Well, and I don't know. Once again, I don't want to speak for you on this one, but and the shows you're playing probably too, at least for us. Like, you know, it'd be like this one second you're like talking to someone via satellite for a TV show. The next second you're playing a basement show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was like a lot of moments throughout the years where like things just didn't ever add up.
Yeah.
But we got used to it.
Yeah.
The constant clashing of like the sorts of activities we were doing.
That Coachella is by far the weirdest festival experience I've ever had that year playing Coachella.
It was like us and then No Age and then you guys, right?
Yeah. And
that was so fun.
It was so fun. And then also X was on our stage.
Oh yeah.
And Throbbing Gristle. And oh God, who else was on our stage? The Horrors, I think too. But
yeah, I didn't know them.
I love them. I think they had the unfortunate slot though of playing against My Bloody Valentine. So it was not.
We played real early, so we didn't have to fight much.
Yeah, no, us too. We were like merciful.
Our set time was 11:45 a.m.
Yeah, I remember because we were all hanging out. You know, like
yeah,
it felt like it really. That was like also the thing that I think made it so cool was it really felt like the three of our bands were, you know, I don't know. Like a kindred spirits.
Yeah, like we all just didn't really fit in.
Yeah, exactly. We all didn't fit in, but we also like all were weirdly in this like hype bubble, and all but somehow like having this amazing experience of getting to like play Coachella, you know, and like play on the same stage as X is playing.
Yeah,
and I got to see. What's his name from Baywatch? Eat a hamburger drunk before he made that video. Even
wait, what?
David Hasselhoff was like wasted, making out with this girl eating a hamburger backstage.
Was she eating the hamburger, or was he eating?
He was eating the hamburger.
While they're kissing?
Yeah, like just holding his hand and eating it while they're kissing. Like, not at the same time, but like, there was a hamburger.
I was picturing at the same time.
Well, there's like, a hamburger in play.
I'm like, that's so Coachella.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I remember coming back to our dressing room too and seeing like Kirsten Dunst making out with someone at our picnic table. Right. Not that anyone in Fucked Up knew them. They were just at our picnic table making out. Yeah.
I remember that my greatest memory from that day was me and Cassie were like running around backstage, like that little trailer park they have set up, stealing alcohol from other bands' trailers and it was working great. Cause like no one's like backstage, no. You know, they're like, watching the bands. And it worked great until we opened the Brian Jonestown Massacre trailer and they were all in there. And they were like, who are you guys? And we're like, and at this point, I think me or Cassie said, we came in here to steal your alcohol, but you're here. And they were like, that's a great idea. So we ended up running around with them, stealing alcohol from other people's.
You picked the right band, I guess, to make accessories
like,
in that
crime. We didn't even know how to lie. We were like, we came in here to steal your alcohol.
Well, and also, would they be mad at you? Like, you stole our free alcohol? But actually, they would. I've seen bands get really upset about that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? You know, we took a gamble. We won.
You won. You definitely won that day. Friends.
We had a good time.
When in Coachella, just might as well roll the dice.
Yeah.
And take those chances.
All bets are off.
So with Vivian Girls, you know, you guys, I guess, like going back to the very beginning, when you started putting out the 7 inches and was that like, it was kind of immediate that people started just freaking out. Was it like, where did that original like excitement come from? Was it like Max Rock and Roll, or where did like people first hear about you guys?
Terminal Boredom.
Oh, Turmbo.
Turmbo. It was for the listeners. Turmbo was a message board for garage rock.
I think it's definitely still around.
Yeah, but this was like, you know, like they loved, you know, like the Black Lips and Jay Riotard, and like that's kind of like the first record collectors that got into Vivian Girls, and that was like why we did so well, was because we like had made 500 copies of our record, and then Terminal Boredom all of a sudden really liked our record, and they bought all the copies. So then it was like, they sold out all their records, like because of this basically like one message board. And so then it got reissued by In the Red because it was like garage. But honestly, like, I feel like we never really sounded like garage rock. But
no, I don't think so either. Yeah.
No, that is probably the weirdest part of all of it, was that we probably owe all of the success we had to garage rock in general.
When I first heard about you guys, because Mike approached me and was like, hey, I want this band to sing on the record from New Jersey in New York. It's Kickball Katie's band. And I'm like, oh, yeah, like, you know, as dismissive as I always am of Mike's ideas when I first hear them. And then he's like, they're awesome. They're like a punk band that sounds like the Manson Family. And that's
an amazing compliment.
That was like, that was my introduction. And it's true when you hear, like, I always heard, you know, like, obviously not Charlie's vocals, but like the Manson girls, for lack of a better name, I guess, because I think Squeaky, I can't remember all their names, but
I do not know any of their names.
Yeah, but them. Sorry.
Oh no, you go.
Oh no, but just them. They're like backing vocal style, like the harmonies that they would do, but over punk. So like obviously we did, you know, you sang on our record, and thank you very much for that. Still to this day,
that was a very fun experience. Because we worked with Jonah.
Yeah.
And he, like, I always was like, Jonah's the drummer. And then he gets in, like, he comes to the studio with us, and he, like, is an amazing musician. Like, I remember him, like, playing these chords on guitar and being like, all right, you sing this note, you sing this note, you sing this note. Like, he was so impressive as, like, a harmony choreographer. What's that?
I guess, like, a music arranger? Vocal arrangement? he's a music genius, that guy.
Yeah. That was an amazing experience. Oh, want to know a funny story?
Yeah.
Is that, so we're called Vivian Girls.
Yeah.
Which, as you know, is the name of a fucked up song.
Yeah.
I was very like, I was like, when, so Frankie was the one who was like, let's call our band Vivian Girls. And because of Henry Darger.
Yeah.
Which is
named the song. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was like, oh no, like fucked up are going to think I'm like a crazy fan.
We always like, not that we ever thought that you named it after it. But it's funny hearing you say that, because like we always thought that maybe you were like, oh, blah, blah, blah. But now knowing that Frankie named it, not you.
Not to say that I didn't like love Fucked Up, but I was like, oh no, they're going to think I'm like a psycho.
No, believe me, that's never.
It's like, I go to all their shows. I drive to Toronto to see them. I hope they don't think I'm like a stalker.
No, we like, I think at that point, I just felt like everyone was just like part of like a scene, you know, like it sounds corny to say, but like no one felt weird at that point. Like, cause everyone was just like a hardcore kid.
Yeah. But that was always a funny thing. I never, until right now, I'm like, does he even know that, like, how our band name came to be?
Like, no, I did. Well, because we always speculated that maybe we weren't ever going to be presumptuous enough to be like, they got the name from the record. But we were like, okay, well, maybe Katie, like, saw the name on the record and was, like, already, like, thinking about, like, you know, knew about Henry Darger and that's where they got the name type thing. Yeah. But
it was Frankie's suggestion, and then I was like, oh, no, they're going to think I'm a stalker. And then I was like, nah, that's cool. I was like, I love Fucked Up. This is great. It was perfect.
Well, that's awesome. Well, because, like, you know, I think at the end of the day, Fucked Up is, like, you know, as much as Mike wants to be as aloof as possible, we're just, like, a band of fans. You know, like it started, Mike was like a Poison Up D obsessive, like trying to collect the discography. And we would just sit in his room and talk about the Danger House catalog and stuff like that. And so, you know, it's only natural that we'd meet like-minded people along the way, you know?
Yeah, no, totally.
And things
Oh, no. What a great time we had.
Yeah, it was an amazing time. Well, it still is an amazing time, obviously. But like, and so with the Vivian girls, you know, obviously Frankie leaves and then Allie joins and things like that. But as a band, were you aware at the time that you were having this kind of influence on people? Were you meeting these younger women at your shows or younger people at your shows that would go on now, I guess, to form this next wave of bands that have been inspired by you? Or did you kind of feel like in a vacuum almost?
That's a good question. I feel like we were so caught up in the moment that we weren't really thinking at all about much. We were just kind of like, we're going on tour again. Like, we were so day to day. Like, we had no real, like, grand picture conversations about, like, our presence in music or, like, where do we fall, like, in the world of the listeners? Like, no. We were just kind of like, shit, another tour starts tomorrow. Let's do our laundry. Like, we were always playing catch up with, like, the next thing we were, like, assigned, like, gonna do.
Was there any place you didn't get to go, or that you haven't gone yet, I guess, at this point?
What hasn't gone?
Like, that you haven't gone to play. Like, you said, how much touring you guys did, and I know you guys did Japan, definitely Australia.
Yeah. And
did you guys do South America?
We never did.
Oh, okay.
I know.
The reunion tour.
Totally.
There you go.
Yeah, we just would tour so relentlessly that we didn't really have time to, like, stop and think about much.
I mean, and so when you guys take that hiatus, I guess you start Lucera during that hiatus, or did you start it while you guys
What hiatus?
Like the first break you guys do after the second LP, or did you guys take a break before that?
No, we didn't really take any breaks. We like probably didn't tour for like 2 months, but then Fiona joined.
Oh, it was Fiona. Okay. I thought there was like a period, I guess it's after that there's a period of inactivity, but I guess it's just a 2 month period. I guess everything just flew by so quickly at that point.
Yeah, like basically, like Allie left and she was in Best Coast, and then Fiona joined like a month later.
Okay, so it was only, yeah.
But then we didn't do any like real tours with Fiona for like another like couple months or so. Like, there was some time of like somewhat inactivity.
And you had Lucera at that point, right?
Yeah, so, like, Fiona joins Vivian Girls around 2010, and that's, like, that month is when I started putting out Lucera stuff.
Okay.
So, and then Cassie's, like, doing Babies.
Yeah.
So, we start, like, kind of, like, doing different bands, too.
Because I think we ran into you around, was it around then, or is it a year later in England? Leeds.
We played that 1-2-3 Go festival, right?
Yeah, that 1-2-3 Go thing.
In London. That was with Fiona.
That was with Fiona. No, I meant when we ran into Lucera.
Wait, where did we run into?
We were just hanging out of that show. Remember, it was like some weird, it was freezing cold backstage, and it was like a Doc Martin party thing, and you guys were on tour, and it was, we were playing in Leeds.
Oh, I think it was
2010.
That would make sense. We were on tour with Jenny Lewis in Jenny and Johnny's band. That would make a lot of sense.
Okay.
But I don't. My memory is like the worst.
No. Okay. No. Don't worry. Mine used to be good until I found other ways to medicate, and now it's
actually that's not true. Bad, and then I stopped medicating.
Well, so. there you go. Get back on the.
My memories are coming back to me. But yeah, that was cold in England.
Yeah, it was absolutely terrifyingly freezing.
I do remember.
You remember that now, right? It was like a weird night.
I totally remember that now. Okay, cool. I was getting worried for a second that I would never remember.
Yeah, I guess that's why I remember meeting you at that point, and we were kind of like afterwards like, geez, I wonder if the Vivian Girls are still a band. Because I guess we hadn't seen you guys play. But I guess we played 1-2-3-4 Go after that? Yeah, it would have been after that.
1-2-3-4 Go would have been the summer following that. So, okay, like, 6 months later.
Yeah, so I guess that's when we saw you guys again. Was there, throughout the whole time with the Vivian Girls, because it was always, you know, you're never stopping to take sort of stock of what's going on and things like that. So did you know, beyond, once you kind of got over the initial shock of criticism, did that stuff just not faze you anymore? Or was it like, you just kind of tune it out at that point and just focus on making music? Or are you always kind of aware of, because I'm constantly aware of people critiquing our stuff.
I would definitely say constantly aware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird. And I guess bands have always had to deal with this, but I think it was much easier to tune it out.
Yeah, plus there was just much less criticism back in the day because it wasn't so easy for everyone to be a music journalist.
That's true.
Now everyone's a music journalist and they all, like, hate what you're doing. Well, that was our experience near the end.
Well, and there's no need for, like, you know, if you think about it, like, you needed, in years prior, you needed someone to write about a record so you knew what it sounded like so you didn't waste your money on buying it if you didn't like it. Now we live in an era where everyone can sample everything. So all criticism is now is just like, you know, just an opinion piece.
Yeah. It's really hard actually to actually get the opportunity to listen to a record without hearing like a million opinions about it beforehand.
Yeah.
Whereas back when I was getting into music, you would have the record and you would just listen to it. And like, that's how I grew up getting into music, was kind of just listening to it. And now it's like the opposite. I'm reading about it all the time before I'm actually listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even help it most of the time. It's just like Twitter, you know?
But it's weird because I talk to these people, like, you know, for this podcast, I've been talking to, like, you know, a lot of people that were around, obviously, first wave punk people. And so many of them are like, I read about punk for so long before I heard it.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's like
full circle.
Yeah, like it's almost like a full circle thing. But yeah, they said they would be reading about in magazines. And I guess it's like, it's different because, you know, the anticipation now before you hear about the music is like moments. Whereas, or you just never want to listen to it. Whereas then it would be, you'd just be anticipating hearing it until you finally got to hear it. But like all these people are like, yeah, I would read about the Sex Pistols in these British music magazines for months. Crazy.
Yeah, no, it's like the opposite now.
Yeah.
But now it's that, but like when I was like 12, it was the opposite.
Yeah, it was the opposite. I guess you could, well, I don't know. Like, I think I remember, you know, I'm trying to think what bands it was, but I you know, like just these bands that I hear about and someone would be like, oh, but you'll never get that record. And it was just prior to Napster and because of the Napster thing I really love. But even Napster, when it came out, you couldn't really get any of the really rare punk stuff on it, like the really obscure stuff. But I just remember hearing about these bands being like, I wonder what they sound like. I wonder what Why Die sounds like. And then when I finally got that 7-inch, having it be amazing and just being so stoked.
Yeah. I guess I missed out on a lot of that. I feel like when I was getting into music, it was like, I was just downloading music.
Yeah.
That's how I got into punk. I was just downloading it to hear it. I was like, not really reading about it. I didn't know about Maximum Rock and Roll until I was like in college. I was just trying to listen to as much music as possible, and now it's the opposite for me. But that would have been fun to read about bands. But by the time I was getting into music, it was exactly like LimeWire, Napster time.
Yeah.
I was like, why wait? Just download immediately. And I was like, I will do just that.
Well, and it's funny because I was like, you know, talking to someone the other day for this thing, and then they were talking about, you know, like now he'll just like listen to music and just not even register what he's listening to. Like you just don't, it's almost like a passive engagement. Whereas when you, when you're just kind of like, even when you're first downloading those MP3s, there's just such a novelty to them. You know, when you're first discovering music, that you just engage with it in such a different way than now. Like even when I try and check out new music, it's like the same sort of thing. It just passively kind of washes over me a lot of the time.
Oh yeah. Well, have you heard of Father John Misty's SAP project?
No, what's that? Oh, I've heard of Father John Misty, but what's the SAP project?
Father John Misty, he's a wonderful person. And he just put out a new album, and him and his friend created this like platform for new music called SAP.
Okay.
And what it is it's all of the basic music, kind of sounds like a MIDI without any vocals or anything. And it's a joke because it's like, here, you can sample this music for free and see if it's something that you like.
Yeah.
Without any of the actual performing or like artistic like vision. It's like music sapped of all of it, of its emotion. And it's a play on the fact that now people just put music on in like the background and it's like, you know, you can't tell bands apart. And like, it's just all so similar. So he put out a version of his album that's like MIDI keyboards. It's remarkable.
It's but you know what? And people are just crying out for the emotion now. Like you listen to like Drake or Kanye West or like, you know, these artists that like have these huge kind of like, or Lana Del Rey even, like people that have sort of these big moments in music right now. And it's all like about the fact that it's like really raw. And emotional and just like,
Sam Smith swept the Grammys last night.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Do you think he's an awkward performer though?
I don't know. I've never seen him perform.
I watched him perform last night. And I'm just like watching him and I'm like, wow, this guy's like, the voice is undeniable, but just like the performance, I was like, it's a little, not all there for someone that famous.
I've literally never seen him, but as soon as we get off the phone, I will look him up on YouTube for the Grammys performance.
And now
you have to really judge a performer by their Grammys performance. That's probably very stressful.
Well, you're going to get a, and he's also performed with Mary J. Blige, who's an amazing performer, obviously.
Ooh, I like her.
I know. And so, you know, he's always going to be kind of like at a disadvantage in that moment. But this could be another white lightning moment for you where you're going to
watch him play and I'm like, I love music.
Yeah, you're going to be like, oh, Damien's an idiot. I regret all those fucked up chores now.
No. Good times.
Do you, obviously at this point, you're like, you know, you're listening to tons of stuff, but are there still punk bands you check out?
Yeah, I definitely don't go out as much as I used to.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I live in LA now, which is like, there aren't as many house shows. Although Allie and Eloy are throwing shows at their house now, which is cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm going to play there in like 2 weeks at a house show. So, but there's not, it's not as like, it's not like New Brunswick or something, you know, like it's not, you know, like Brooklyn with 538 Johnson and like all those amazing dungeons to see bands in. Ooh. LA's different, but there are bands in LA that I love. There's Girl Pool. They're from LA.
Yep.
No Parents. They're fun.
Yep. Have you checked out In School? You know that band? The Skolnar's band from Max Rock and Roll?
Nope.
I just got their 7-inch the other day at a punk rock record swap. It's awesome.
Good. I will check. It's called In School?
In School. I think that's what it's called. I'm like trying to look at it from the other side of my room right now that I'm in. And I can't really make it out. But if it's not, I will fix that in the intro and extra for this podcast and text you and let you know the truth.
Sweet.
Type thing. Well, Katie, I won't keep you anymore. Thank you so much for taking the time and talking to me today. And I guess actually one thing is like, what were sort of the big carryways that you took away from punk rock? Like whether it be DIY, whether it be, you know, letting your freak flag fly, whether it be the fact that punk rock's actually way more conservative than it would be let on to be.
I mean, I owe everything to punk.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what, like who I'd be now without it. And I like, it's completely who I am. Like obviously I don't live like a super DIY, like train hopping lifestyle all the time. However, like it does like influence
everything.
That like lifestyle influences my decisions and like my thoughts and who I am and forever, you know, it's like growing up as a hardcore punk kid is like a wonderful experience. I would say, like, just being able, the most important thing that it offered me was the ability to, like, know that, like, with Vivian Girls, like, we could just do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can just, like, tour anywhere. Like, you can put out records. Like, we started a record label because we just, like, wanted to know how records were put out. So we were like, hey, let's put out a label. And, like, let's, like, start a label and put out a bunch of records. And we did that. And, like, it was just, like, being the DIY aspect of punk is, like, life-changing. You know, like, when you realize you don't have to rely on other people, you don't need, like, a manager, you don't need anything like that, like, it's really freeing.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys ever get approached by major labels?
No. And we never had a manager really? Or, like, were approached by any major labels or anything. Your manager was hilarious.
Who's our manager?
When you guys, you had a fake manager.
Yeah, or a fake manager. Okay, good.
Yeah, like, that's amazing.
I'm like, wait, who approached you telling you that they were our manager? Did Mike ever write you an email as David Iliad?
No, but I remember being like, wait, who is David Iliad? And then, like, finding out that he wasn't real was like, it was amazing. I was like, that's genius.
That's amazing. Because I was worried, because, like, he was still using David Iliad into the first LP. So I'm worried, like, after the first LP, he's approaching you to do vocals on the second one as David Iliad.
No. This is from, like, you know, a
back
long time
in the day.
Ago. But I remember being like, well, Fuck Dope don't have a manager. He's not real. Their manager's not even real. So, like, why do we need one? Because, like, I'm around musicians sometimes where they're like, I'm trying to find a manager.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, you just do your thing.
Yeah.
And, like, work with good people, and people will come to you in time. You know, like,
You don't need that stuff until it comes to you.
Yeah, and, like, you don't have to go out there and fight for it. If you put out music that you love and that you believe in and that, you know, like, you release it into the world and you play shows and you do your thing, like, good people will find you. I believe in that.
Yeah, like, I'll talk to sometimes these people and they'll be like, what do I get first, a booking agent or a manager? And it's like, play shows, you know?
Yeah. I remember, like, John Chavez, who's was Vivian Girl's manager. Was he your manager?
Booking agent.
Or booking agent, I mean?
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. He still is. He's still our booking agent.
Yeah, he's still my booking agent. So he books, like, let's say I've been working with him for, like, 8 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember the first thing he told me, he was like, hey, I want to be your booking agent for Vivian Girls. And we were like, I don't know. Like, we were very skeptical of getting a booking agent because we were like, that's not punk. But he was a punk. He was actually in a band called The Punks.
who probably weren't the best example of that name, though.
Probably not. But anyway, I love John Chavez.
I love John Chavez, too.
And I remember something he said to me was that he would never book a band. He would never, like, take on a band that had never booked their own tour.
Yeah.
And that meant a lot to me and still does. I don't think that's even the case anymore because music has changed so drastically where now you just need, like, a YouTube hit to, like, be, like, the most popular band in the world. But back then I was like, yeah, that's, like, you need to kind of, like, learn all those things about, you know, DIY and punk in order to be, you know what's good and know what's bad and, like, be able to make judgments.
Yeah, by the same extension, I would say never take a booking agent that hasn't done a van tour.
Yeah.
Sometimes those routings that you get from booking agents are ridiculous. And, like, John Chavez had done van tours, so he knows, you know, how long those drives should be before you get...
Oh, yeah. He's excellent. And it's because he grew up in punk. You know, like, it's just a chain of, you know, if you do your thing, cool people come along and they help you, and it's great. And, like, life rules. And that's all punk. Punk does that.
Punk does that. Absolutely. And, yeah, and if you find a way to, like, work with punk people, you know, like, you can always kind of trust, you know, someone from your scene, I guess.
Yeah. That is true.
Maybe not always. It's not always. Terrible advice.
I've met some sketchy people.
I've met some horribly sketchy people in the scene.
I've been some sketchy people in my scene before, and, you know.
Never trust a punk, actually.
My friend in Boston once told me, he said, never trust someone who was never punk or still is.
That is some sound advice.
I don't know if I completely subscribe, but...
Well, then you're just trusting...
There's something to it.
You just trust all the vice staff if you're looking for someone that fits in the middle of that pocket.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go there.
Katie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This has been lovely.
No, it's been awesome getting to talk with you and getting to catch up and getting to talk about punk rock. And, you know, once again, you know, so many fun tours, so many fun shows, and so many fun more coming.
Yeah.
All right, buddy.
True. Thank you so much.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.